Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Parsha Imor. Rabbi Alex Israel is a faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Director of Continuing Education for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week is Parsha Imor. I would like to actually talk about a theme which I believe spans two different places, at least, in this week's Parsha, one at the very end and one sort of in the middle. The theme that we're going to talk about relates to some very interesting components. What I mean is the name of God, the publicity of the name of God, which we call Kiddush and Chilul Hashem, and the notion of the community, the Jewish community, the people of Israel. How are they all connected? And I believe that there are at least two places in the Parsha where we see the same elements come together in an interesting web of interconnectedness. I'm going to begin at the end of chapter 22, where we actually see the mitzvah, or the command, of Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying God's name, and not to do Chilul Hashem, not to blacken or blaspheme God's name. It says there, I'm reading from verse 31, Oshmartem mitzvotai v'asitem otam, ani Hashem. Keep my commands, perform them, I am the Lord. V'lo techalalu et shem kodshi. Do not profane my holy name. V'niktashti betoch b'nei Yisrael. And I will be sanctified in the midst of Israel. Ani Hashem ikadishchem. I am God who sanctifies you, who takes you out of Egypt, etc., etc. Here we see an emphasis on the phrase that God's sanctification takes place particularly betoch b'nei Yisrael, in the midst of Israel. And Rashi even mentions this. Rashi says, betoch b'nei Yisrael, yachol b'yachid. Maybe you think, just when you're by yourself, when you're alone as an individual, Talmud lomar, betoch b'nei Yisrael, that there is a dimension of Kiddush Hashem which is amongst the Jewish people. It is in the midst of the Jewish people. It is around a Jewish community. It is in public. How do these things all connect? How does the public dimension of Kiddush Hashem connect with Betoch B'nai Israel, the community? Yachol B'yachid, do we mean that you're talking about a situation in which you are alone? Can you make a Kiddush Hashem, or can you act in a state of Chilul Hashem, profanation of God's name, alone? Talmud lomar betoch b'nei Yisrael. We're talking about when you are in the midst of the children of Israel. In other words, what he seems to be talking about here is that there is a particular problem with doing certain sacrilegious acts in public, in front of other Jews. So much so that even though there are let me just say two words about the mitzvah, or the command, of Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem, which means sanctifying God's name, can appear in many, many different guises. One guise is that a Jew, by his ethical behavior and by his upstanding conduct, sanctifies God's name, because people see Jewish people acting well, and they say, not just that Jews act well, but they say that this goes right to the heart of religion, that it's not only a Jew who is good, but it's clearly the God of the Jews, which the God of the Jews gives a ethical and upstanding code of conduct to his people. That's called a Kiddush Hashem. Of course, Chilul Hashem is the opposite. God's name is dragged through the dust. God's name is blackened and besmirched when Jews act in immoral, despicable ways, because then people say, well, this religion, this God, is clearly not good. But there are other ways to do Kiddush Hashem. In our prayers, we do Kiddush Hashem. We do Kedusha and Kaddish. We sanctify God's name. Yitgadal v'yitgadash Shmei Rabbah. May God's name be sanctified. So in prayer, kadosh, 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 we sanctify God. What exactly we're doing there is unclear, but it would appear to be some prayer or some expression of desire that God and the regime, God and the world order, which we feel Judaism and Hashem represents, will be more manifest, will be wider spread in the world as we know it. The most extreme example of Kiddush Hashem is martyrdom, that there are certain laws which are so severe, for example, idolatry, immorality, sexual immorality, adultery, for example, or murder, which are so extreme that one must give one's life for the sake of keeping the religion rather than transgress them, and that is the idea of Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, sometimes we can even have a situation where Kiddush Hashem can apply in private, but generally it applies in public. When somebody tries to make a public spectacle out of a Jew in order to ask him to defy his religion, betoch b'nei Yisrael, then when he gives up his life for the sake of the religion, that is called to die al Kiddush Hashem. The very interesting thing that I'm using all the time is the shame, the name. What is the idea of the name of God? Is the name of God so important? What does it mean to have an identity based on a name? That the name of God has to be sanctified? That the name of God can be profaned? Here I'd like to say a few words about names. I think in today's world we're maybe even more sensitive to names than we ever were. Because today we talk very much about brands and brand names. We can all have a logo. We all know that there are certain brand names. We also know that certain words in our Google world that we live in, certain words can trigger all sorts of responses, not only psychological, but you put in a key word, that key word can bring up all sorts of associations. Names, from time immemorial, have been very close to identity. In Genesis chapter 2, in Bereshit, when Adam is lonely, God suggests that he approach all the different animals to see if any are suitable for him in order to be his companion. It says that what Adam does is that Adam goes and he calls them by name. And whatever name he gave them, that became its name. But he didn't find a companion. The calling of names is an expression of identity. We find frequently that a change of name, well, first of all, naming people is their identity. For example, Jacob, Yaakov, because he holds on to the Akev, the heel of his brother, or better, as Esav says later, Achein karash shemo Yaakov, v'yaakveini zepa amayim. He is called Jacob because he has tricked me, and that's what Jacob means. In fact, the name Edom means red, because Esav is Edom, he is red, ruddy. Avraham's name is changed from Abraham to Abraham, but Avraham means Av Hamon Goyim. It's sort of like an acronym. Names mean a lot in Judaism, but I think what it really goes to the heart of is that a name is an identity. How many times do we see people who become newly religious change their name? People who emigrate sometimes change their last name. Ben-Gurion was very adamant that anybody who wanted to become an Israeli government official or diplomat should Hebraicize their name. And therefore you had people whose name was, I don't know, Schwartz, who became Shachor. And if I'm not mistaken, Ben-Gurion himself, his name originally was Green, but he wanted to make it more Israelified. And therefore he calls his name Ben-Gurion instead of Green. Language, names. Names do give us certain pointers. They give us a certain understanding of what things are. They lead to the very essence. When we talk about Kiddush Hashem, we don't see God's essence. We don't see God's body. He doesn't have one. There's nothing we can pinpoint and say, there's God. The one thing we can do, the one place we can grasp God, is through his name. His name means what we call today a reputation. His name means what we call today an identity. And with the virtual world, we can understand this is a virtual identity. It's an identity which is formed in people's hearts and people's souls. Maybe it's so sensitive because God has nothing else. God has nothing else other than his name and that which is associated with it, which can help communicate to people what God is. And therefore here we have the idea of the Kiddush Hashem and the Chilul Hashem, and I'm stressing that it is betoch b'nei Yisrael, the phrase used here, in the midst of the people of Israel. And there are many halachic ramifications about Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem being done in public as opposed to private. Now, everything I've said so far is in a sense a lead-in or a lead-up to that which I'd like to talk about now, which is the very, very mysterious episode that takes place towards the end of chapter 24. And that is the case of the blasphemer. To cut a long story short, we're talking about a man who has a fight with somebody in the camp, the Israelite camp in the wilderness, and he pronounces God's name and curses it. The people don't quite know what to do with this guy, and it's not sure why, not clear why they don't know, but it seems like they don't know the punishment, and eventually God pronounces a death sentence on this person. And I have to say that I've always felt, when I read this, that from a modern consciousness, we instinctually feel that this is rather harsh. Somebody blasphemes the name of God, and you kill him? I think we've all heard about the case of blasphemy cases of Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie, I think it was about 20 years ago, who wrote a novel where he in some way maligned Islam or Muhammad, and well, was issued against him, and he pretty much had to live in hiding. I think he still does to a certain degree, lives very carefully, worrying that this death threat will at some point be enacted against him. And the whole world was up in arms and said, okay, you know, you can't apply these laws. There is a freedom of expression. There is a freedom of literature. Now, I have to say this is a very interesting topic in itself. Sometimes things are so sacred that we feel that people shouldn't be allowed to express them. For example, I think something which is close to many of our hearts as a sensitive point, Holocaust denial. If somebody denies the Holocaust, people fight very strongly against that. In some countries, it's even a crime to deny the Holocaust and claim it didn't happen. But why? It's just an idea. It's just a word. I think it is because we claim that if you deny the Holocaust, then we're worried that you are not bothered by genocide. We understand it as a sort of the denial of the Holocaust is a sort of crime against humanity already, that you're unwilling to accept the fact that this thing happened and therefore to fight against it. But you can argue, but this is only an idea, it's only a thought. But no, we are aware, certainly today, that ideas can be very, very powerful. Again, as modern people, I think we are somewhat torn between our sense of freedom that we feel when it comes to things like Salman Rushdie, and when we realize that when things are really genuinely close to our hearts, when we're talking about Holocaust denial, when we're talking about anti-Semitic statements, we do understand that speech is critical and that the way people express themselves can really be the beginning of enormous harm. That rallying public opinion in a certain direction can happen through very powerful speech, and that when we say that sticks and stones can break bones but words won't hurt, that is definitely not true. Words are way more powerful than sticks and stones. You can break my bones, but ideas continue forever. And therefore, even though the notion that somebody blasphemes God, that you should kill them, and that seems a very extreme, I think that maybe we have to rethink this idea of the Kiddush Hashem and the Chilul Hashem. The idea that the name of God, something which is so central, something which is such a central feature of that which commands and governs all morality, all order, all ethics, when somebody comes up and actually pronounces that very explicitly in a public environment, then that is an affront to us all. That is an affront to the order in which we live. That undermines the very existence of any sense of right and wrong, of good and bad. I have to be honest, I'm trying to convince. Because again, as I say, as a modern person, we find death sentence something like this exceptionally difficult to accept. But it's here, it's written in the good book, it's in Vayikra, that this is what happens. So this is the case of the blasphemer. But I think I'm even more interested in the second thing I mentioned, B'toch B'nai Israel. What led to this case of a person standing there in the center of the camp and blaspheming God? So here I'd like to read a couple of sentences with you and look at Rashi and understand maybe the background to this story. Vayetzei ben Isha Yisraelit. This is what we're told. Again, I'm in chapter 24, verse 10. And we're told the story like this. I'll read in Hebrew and then translate. Vayetzei ben Isha Yisraelit. V'hu ben Ishmitzri. A man went out. He is the son of a Jewish woman, an Israelite woman, but the son of an Egyptian man, B'toch B'nei Israel. He goes into Toch B'nei Israel, the midst of the Jewish people. He goes into the Jewish people. V'yinatzu b'machane. And they fought. V'yinatzu indicates probably a violent struggle, a fist fight. V'yinatzu b'machane ben ha-Yisraelit. The son of the Israelite woman with the Ish HaYisraeli, with an Israelite man. Vayikov ben HaIsha Yisraelit et Hashem. And the son of the Israelite woman pronounced God's name, Vayikalel, and he cursed it. Vayaviu otol Moshe. And they brought him to Moses. Who is this unnamed man? Why is he described in this strange way? Why is it important that he is a person who has an Israelite mother and an Egyptian father? Rashi starts here with a very, very innocuous point where he says, why does the parasha begin, Vayetzei ben Isha Yisraelit? Where did he come from? Where was he going to? What's Vayetzei? Why doesn't it say Vayahi and there was? Why? Where's he going? He's also puzzled by the phrase Vayinatsu b'machaneh, and they struggled in the camp. What's the camp got to do with anything? Why not just Vayinatsu? And Rashi, in his third explanation here, makes an amazing suggestion. And this is what he says. He says that here we have a man who has a non-Jewish father. He is a half-caste, he doesn't quite belong. And in Judaism, or in the Israelite camp, inheritance and identity goes according to the father. Judaism might go according to the mother, he is a Jew. However, his identity, his tribal identity, he doesn't have one. He doesn't have one because his father is not Jewish. Later it mentions that his mother is Shlomit Bat Divrina Matedan. His mother has a tribe, but his father doesn't. Says Rashi, he came to encamp and pitch his tent, and he went to his mother's tribe, Dan, and they said, you can't be here, you're not from Dan. He said, but my mother's from Dan. They said, but your father isn't. And he said, well, where do you want me to go? I don't have a place in the Jewish community. I don't have a Jewish father. He went to speak to Moshe, and Moshe couldn't find a solution for him. He stood up and he cursed God's name. There is no doubt that the very succinct language of the Torah stresses exactly what led to this. That we have somebody who is a Ben Isha Yisraelit. He's descended from just Jewish mother, Behu Ben Ish Mitzri, but he has an Egyptian father. And he comes out Betoch Bnei Israel. What I want to argue here is that before I said that Kiddush Hashem happens Betoch Bnei Israel, happens amongst Jews, that when we are amongst Jews and Jews see and Jews experience what we do, we can cause a Chilul Hashem. We can either profane God as a community, or we can aggrandize and spread and boost the name of God by our action. That is Kiddush and Chilul Hashem. But here I want to suggest a different theory. The question is Betoch Bnei Israel, what happens inside our community? And the question which led immediately, the issue which led immediately to this event of blasphemy, was the question of how we relate to outsiders. And maybe not even full outsiders, maybe we're good with them, but half outsiders. People who don't quite fit into what we think. The person who argues with him is a full-fledged Ish Yisraeli, but he is just a Ben Yisraelit. He is an Israelite man, but this man is just the son of an Israelite woman. How do we accept people? This person who feels unaccepted by the community, he tries to be betoch ben Israel. He tries to be amongst the Jewish people, but they won't accept him. And he understands that there isn't something wrong with the Jewish people. He sees it as there's something wrong with the Jewish God. Sometimes we turn around, and we look at our communities which aren't perfect, and we say, oh yeah, our religion's great, but the community has something lacking. But in this story, I can't help feeling that it's not us who have to sanctify God. It's not us who have to have the liability to profane God's name. If our Betoch Bnei Israel, how welcoming are we? How accepting are we? Are we willing to accept people who don't exactly fit? Because sometimes when somebody has a bad experience in the Jewish community, when somebody doesn't feel warmly accepted, when somebody doesn't feel that they've been given a valid chance, they don't take it out on the community, they take it out on religion. How many times have I seen students who have fallen away from their religious commitments because of the way they've been treated in high school? How many times have I seen people who have been put off by the Jewish community at the college campus and have therefore lost their ties with Shabbat services or Friday night meals? And exactly the opposite. How many times are we able, by the warmth and generosity, by the welcoming and hachnasat orchim within our communities, people don't just come into the community and feel the social warmth, but they understand that this has its roots in a sense of God. That Hachnasat Orchim brings people tachat kanfei hashchina. It brings people towards God, and therefore there's actually a very intimate connection between the way that people evaluate religion and the way the Toch Bnei Israel, the community of Israel, act. And therefore, next time, when we're evaluating this topic of how inclusive we are, how much we are willing to put on a friendly face, let's remember that Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem isn't just the way whether we boost God's reputation or whether we drag it through the dirt. It's not just a question of how we relate to our davening, how we relate to our prayer, our religious artifacts, or even our Torah learning, but it is frequently the question of the tone and the tenure of our community. And if our communities enable us to be Bnei Yisrael, to accept all Jews, then people will be less likely to blaspheme God. When we are welcoming, we are warm, people will see Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael. They will realize that God resides betoch b'nei Yisrael. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send your comments to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.